Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage. Talking Ole Miss and MSU, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Logan, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, Parrish. Counting down the days till only have one sport to cover. Spring football is kind of drawing to a close. Mississippi State will have their second spring scrimmage this weekend, and then they'll finish things up next weekend with their annual spring game, and that'll be it for football, hopefully, until August. So, be down to just baseball at that point. And you know, as a reporter, you kind of can breathe at that point of the year. I mean, things, you know, sports overlap and stuff, and you got a lot on your plate throughout the year. And when you just get down to that, just that one sport of baseball at the end, you know, summer is drawing closer.
That's right. Well, you know, Ole Miss will conclude spring drills on Saturday. The Rebels not having a spring game this year with all the construction going on outside of campus and whatnot. But you know, Logan, after spring football, you have the arrest season. You know, you have the off field incident season. Ole Miss got a little bit of a head start on that earlier this week when Rod Taylor, it came to light, was arrested last Sunday for what might have been an accident, what could have been just some confusion there. But he was arrested on a shoplifting charge at Walmart in Oxford when he was getting some items. I would like to have been there. It looks like a big grilling about to occur. Big lots of you know, food on the grill and getting ready for a cookout, and had some charcoal under his buggy on the rack below the basket. And you know, he had paid for some items and was walking out with the charcoal not paid for, and some other items too, it looks like, but had some things beneath the basket and was going through self-check. And anyway, he was detained a little bit, and you know, so they're sorting out some of that right now with Rod Taylor. That's a guy who, you know, they really, really like his athleticism and believe he can be a big part of the offensive line if he, number one, gets healthy. He's had off-season surgery on his shoulder, and number two, you know, just it's Richard Cross, you know, Richard Cross on Head to Head, who said it's just not hard to not get arrested. You know, it's just not hard to not get arrested. So if he could, you know, clear up this incident and stay healthy, Rod Taylor can be a big part of the Ole Miss offensive line. Hey, folks, we're going to talk some baseball and a little more spring football too before we get deeper in the program. I want to tell you about some other podcasts of the Daily Journal that you need to search for when you're looking for news updates. Check out The Memo. It's 3 days a week on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, all things news and current events in Northeast Mississippi. And on Wednesdays, for your high school sports needs, check out Prep Rally with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps, another production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Logan, since we got started with spring football, let's stay there a little while, and then we'll get to the baseball series coming up this weekend. What do you know about State? I know you saw a scrimmage, and obviously you know, they're going to go a little bit longer than Ole Miss. We'll come back to Ole Miss in a second, but what have you learned about the Bulldogs this spring?
Well, not a whole lot in the last week and a half or so. The first week of practice was open to the media and to the public as well. And for the first time since Dan Mullen got here, he closed practice that second week and has remained closed. So I really just hadn't learned a whole lot. Now, the scrimmages are still going to be open, and I finally got a chance to see Mississippi State scrimmage inside Davis Wade Stadium this past Saturday. And it was really my first time to see them that week. And really, you know, all eyes are focused on the quarterbacks. Obviously, Mississippi State's got four quarterbacks trying to fill that role that Dak Prescott left, you know, with graduation. And really, they rotated all four of those guys through. All of them had about the same amount of reps with each team, first, second, third team. And really didn't see a whole lot of separation there. Just really not the best day from some of those guys, especially the oldest guy, the only guy that actually has a start among that group, and that's Damian Williams. And, of course, he redshirted this past year, but he was just 2 of 11 for 27 yards and 3 interceptions during that scrimmage. So some horrid numbers for him. Nick Fitzgerald was 8 of 20 for 118 yards and an interception. And I guess Elijah Staley probably had one of the better days at quarterback this past Saturday, but he was 14 of 23 for 167 yards, threw the only touchdown of the scrimmage, but also had 2 interceptions as well. So interceptions was kind of the theme of the day. Actually had 6 of them during that scrimmage. Brendan Bryant, the sophomore safety, had 3 of those interceptions, one of which he returned 97 yards for a touchdown. So a big day on his behalf. But the defense overall looked impressive. Obviously, 4 new coaches on that side of the ball. They're going with more of a 3-4 look, it seems, this year, and had some success with that. Going, just looking at some of the numbers, I mentioned the 6 interceptions. They also had 13 tackles for loss and 8 sacks. So they were getting after the quarterback, causing a lot of incompletions. A lot of those interceptions were because of the pressure on the quarterback. And, you know, it just really was a good day for the defense. And that's not uncommon this time of the spring. Obviously, defense can be learned a lot quicker than offense a lot of the time. So a lot of times in these spring scrimmages, and also when you get to fall camp, you see the defense dominate early on and then the offense sort of catch up. So I'm interested to see this week how much the offense has improved. And obviously by the time the spring game rolls around next weekend, and you know, things should be pretty much even if things are on par. So we'll have to see if the defense continues to progress and play the way that it has, and the offense obviously needs to improve as well.
So Damian Williams, the fact that he's 1-0 in Egg Bowl starts, that's not going to launch him to a number one at quarterback and Dak Prescott's replacement, is it?
Well, he was Dak Prescott's backup for 2 years. Nick Fitzgerald's been Dak Prescott's backup for 1 year. So, those are kind of the two front runners. Obviously Elijah Staley's probably the dark horse in that he didn't play but in 2 games this past year as a redshirt freshman. So hadn't seen a whole lot of him yet. Obviously, he's a huge talent. He's 6'6", former basketball player, played basketball here at Mississippi State as well, left-hander, has a lot of ability. So he's probably throws the best ball out of the 4 quarterbacks. He throws a really pretty deep ball, but just has to kind of hone in and make some better decisions and make sure he concentrates. I know he missed a couple of snaps. Some of them were bad snaps, some of them were on him, but he needs to be a little bit more consistent if he wants to be the starter as well. So that quarterback competition is going to continue. We'll see what they can do this next Saturday. I guess I'll update it on next week's podcast how they did.
Well, there is a quarterback competition at Ole Miss this spring as well, but it's for number 2, not for number 1. Ole Miss is in the enviable position right now of returning a successful, experienced quarterback in Chad Kelly. Now that successful, experienced quarterback had sports hernia surgery last week. This is something that came out earlier this week. So Kelly is done for spring drills. There's a quick turnaround usually on the healing after sports hernia surgery. He's not expected to miss much in the way of summer workouts, and certainly not August practice. So Chad Kelly will be back and ready to go, but the competition will be for number 2, and it will be either true freshman Shea Patterson, the number 1 quarterback recruit in the country, according to the major recruiting services, or redshirt freshman Jason Pellerin. And, you know, here's the thing. Practice at Ole Miss, Logan, hasn't been closed down quite as much as state. So we're able to see a little bit, but I think you learn more by reading between the lines. And what I have observed of the quarterbacks, they've done some good things. Patterson has thrown some good balls and some things like that. So has Pellerin. But I think you got to read between the lines here. And what we've heard early on is that Pellerin really needs to improve his footwork. Okay, he really likes Hugh Freeze. Really likes Pellerin as a running quarterback, a gifted, physical, athlete at 6'4" and, you know, close to 230. So a lot of, you know, ability with a big frame. But when you talk about footwork, that leads to other problems. That leads to inaccuracy. That leads to a whole lot of things that can go wrong on a given play if your base is not set and your technique is not what it needs to be. What Freeze has told us about Patterson is that Patterson is, quote, not a normal freshman. So you would think that when you've got a five-star guy coming in at that position, but still he's a freshman and still having to learn his way. It will be interesting to see how the backup position plays out behind Kelly. Number one, the number one thing that Ole Miss needs in 2016 is health for Chad Kelly. They need Chad Kelly to be ready to go every time they take the field. They might need to wrap him in bubble wrap this summer and make sure nothing happens to Chad Kelly. But you always have to prepare for that possibility. And if something bad were to happen to Chad Kelly early in the year, you know, I thought back at the end of last season, looking ahead to 2016, that, well, they might have an experienced quarterback who could take them through a few games before they handed it off to someone else. But both Ryan Buchanan and Devontae Kincaid have transferred out of the program or left the program. Buchanan will remain at Ole Miss as a student, Kincaid having transferred to Grambling. You know, if either of those guys had remained in the program, that would have been a pretty good backup plan behind Kelly. But that's not the case. If something happened to Kelly right now, you really have inexperience at the position, albeit, you know, talent. I think you've got a lot of talent in both of those guys, a different kind of talent. They're different type players. But a lot of inexperience right now. It would definitely be some growing pains and some learning on the go if either Shea Patterson or Jason Pellerin were pressed into a lot of play for Ole Miss next season. Shifting gears a little bit, talking about defense, what we've seen with this defensive line right now. You know, they're replacing Robert Kimdichie, but not only Kimdichie, but also Woodrow Hamilton, a starting nose tackle, a guy that had played a lot of football for Ole Miss. So two starters gone on the defensive line. They've got some guys, some reserves that played a lot last year and were very successful, and Breland Speaks and DJ Jones. You know, they'll move up and they'll become the starters. But one of the things that has helped Ole Miss be so successful on the defensive line for the last several years has been the depth at the position, the number of players they could play and count on, usually eight, sometimes as many as 10 players. Well, Chris Kiffin, the defensive line coach, isn't giving in on that depth. He believes that he's going to have at least eight guys and maybe more that he can count on. And he understands, look, you're losing guys that have played a lot of football in Kimdichie and Hamilton, and maybe you manipulate that rotation a little bit, you know, and maybe your best players play a little bit longer. But he's going to find eight guys that he can use in games, because when you do that and your starters can be fresh at the end of games, it makes a huge difference in how your defense is playing in the fourth quarter. So looking behind Speaks and Jones, we've seen Austrian Robinson, a redshirt freshman, get a lot of snaps with the twos, and also Ross Donnelly, who was pressed into action last year after the injury to Isaac Gross in the season opener. And a guy to watch now is freshman Benito Jones, you know, a big signee out of Wayne County, you know, one of the top players in the country at his position. You know, he's an early enrollee, so he's around for spring ball, and he's gotten some very valuable experience, a lot of reps as well. And Kiffin believes that Benito Jones will be in that mix of the top eight people in that rotation. And I mentioned Gross. You know, that's another wild card on this defensive line. You know, Ole Miss can bring back a guy of all SEC potential, a senior who ranks among the conference leaders among active players in tackles for loss at 27.5 over his career. He didn't play last year, only in the Tennessee Martin game. Then he had a bulging disc and neck surgery. So, you know, basically, he he played not at all last year, and you're able to bring him back and insert a player of that experience and ability, of that get-off and that quickness into your lineup. It's going to help Ole Miss overcome the loss of those two starters and help the Rebels have that depth that Chris Kiffin is looking for. So that's, I think that's been the most one of the more interesting positions to watch this spring. Defensive line, some holes at safety they're trying to fill too, and again, a lot of players competing back there. But so much of what the Rebels have been able to do defensively the last couple of years has started up front with depth on the defensive line, and it looks like they will have that again, and we'll see if they can be as good late in games as they have been.
Yeah, another position I'm kind of keeping my eye on, and it wasn't a position I was looking at mainly this spring, is a wide receiver. I mean, obviously, Darunya Wilson leaving left some shoes to fill, but you know, Mississippi State would look pretty good there. Fred Ross led the SEC in receiving last year, in receptions last year, and you know, he was going to be back. Donald Gray showed some flashes last year as a sophomore coming back for his junior year. And, you know, probably those are probably their two biggest names at that position. And both of those guys are out for the rest of the spring. Fred Ross never stepped on the field. He had surgery that actually day that spring practice started, he had surgery on his groin and is going to miss the spring. Now, he's probably going to be back for the fall. They've been unexpected any delays with him. That's why they wanted to go ahead and get it done as early as they did. And then Donald Gray hyperextended his right knee, I believe it was, in a practice last week. So he's going to miss the rest of spring. They said it could be a slight fracture in some of those bones rubbing together in there. And they just kind of keep him out as a precaution. So it's going to be he's going to be out for about 4 weeks. So that'll keep him out for the rest of spring. But that's given some other receivers some opportunities. Some of those young receivers coming in, like a Keith Mixon and Dedrick Thomas, a guy like Jesse Jackson we didn't see a whole lot of last year. Young receiver like Malik Deer coming out there. You know, it gives some of those young receivers more reps in practice and obviously a chance to get on the field and you know, develop a chemistry with those quarterbacks that I mentioned earlier. Another move that they've made to kind of help with that depth this spring, and I don't know if it's going to stick heading into fall, is they've moved Jamal Peters from safety to wide receiver this spring. It's something they're trying out. Obviously, Jamal Peters was one of the top safety recruits in the country 2 years ago. He played right immediately as a true freshman last year. Actually got a couple of starts at safety as a true freshman this past season. But they're going to try him out at wide receiver and see how he does there. He was playing this past Saturday in that scrimmage with a splint on his pinky and ring finger. So it's kind of hard to catch when you've got that. He did make a couple of catches for 17 yards, but obviously a load of talent with a guy like that. He's about 6'2", a little under 210 pounds, and you know, very athletic, and gives Mississippi State quarterbacks a bigger target if he can develop at that position. Obviously, he's still doing a lot of learning right now, learning the offense, learning some of the routes that they run, and making that transition from defense to offense, and we'll kind of have to see how that goes and see if that sticks. Is that something they're going to continue in the fall once they get Donald Gray and Fred Ross back on the field? But they've got a lot of depth at the safety position. They feel good about that. I talked about Brendan Bryant earlier and the three interceptions he had in that scrimmage. Obviously, they got a senior, Kevon Coleman, coming back at that position. And obviously, another talented sophomore back there, Mark McLaurin. So they feel good about what they have at that position. So they're going to kind of experiment with Jamal Peters there at wide receiver and see if that's something that they can, I guess, exploit or put to use in the fall at that position, because obviously they lost one of their better talents in Darunya Wilson, who left early for the NFL draft.
Shifting gears, talking baseball. Ole Miss is at home this weekend against Arkansas. The Rebels have now put two good games together on offense back to back, and that is significant. They were able to avoid the sweep in Starkville last weekend, snapped a 5-game losing streak with the 8-5. Was it 8-5, Logan?
8-5
win on Sunday.
Yes.
8-5 win. 8 runs on 10 hits for Ole Miss in that game, and then they followed that up with a 6-2 win over Southern Miss on Tuesday. 6 runs on 11 hits. Now, over the life of a five-game losing streak, in the last four games of that streak, Ole Miss was only hitting about 166 and had faced some very good pitching over the life of that losing streak. They've got to find a way to hit and score against other teams' best pitching. Now, obviously, Dakota Hudson from State, is a top pro prospect, will be off the board early in the first round. A lot of teams are not going to hit and score that much against him, but every SEC team has quality pitching, and Ole Miss has got to take the next step with its offense and find ways to get on the scoreboard even against the other team's best starters. They can't wait until the third game in a series to start having success on offense. So that is the next step for this team as it tries to distance itself further from a five-game losing streak. The Rebels 3-6 in SEC play going into this Arkansas series. They'll face an Arkansas team that is 4-5 in conference play. And the pitching on this team looks like it will be competitive, but not outstanding. No Arkansas pitcher ranks in the top 15 in the conference in ERA or strikeouts. They're not going to see, the Rebels will not see a starter with a sub-2 ERA. The best starting ERA for Arkansas this weekend will be 2.6. So back-to-back strong performances on offense for Ole Miss. Still need to take another step to be a more competitive team early in an SEC series. And it's not only about offense for this team. The Rebels will have a new pitching rotation this weekend as well. That has not been announced at this point, but lots of candidates there. Could be two new starters as Mike Bianco shuffles the deck there a little bit. Not really pleased with the production he's been getting from Chad Smith and Sean Johnson, the number 2 and 3 starters early this season. Both of those guys are, in essence, first-year JUCO transfers, Logan. Chad Smith is in his first year out of junior college. Sean Johnson, very successful at Iowa Western 2 years ago. He was in the Ole Miss program last year, but has spent most of his time at Ole Miss having Tommy John surgery and then rehabbing from it. He appeared in only one game for just an inning or so in the 2015 season. So basically, they cast their lot with two first-year JUCO transfers, and you just don't know what you're going to get from those guys, even coming from junior college when they are making that jump to the SEC for the first time. Ole Miss has had some guys have success like that, most recently Christian Trent. And he was a first-year JUCO guy who was a very big part of the 2014 College World Series team. But it's a shot in the dark as far as how they're going to make that transition early in their careers. And it's not been as good as it needs to be for Smith and Johnson. That being said, you take these guys out of the rotation, you still have to get something out of them. You got to find ways to help them be successful. You got to find spots in the game where you can run them out there and get a few outs and get a few innings. Because if you don't, all of a sudden your very deep pitching staff has become much thinner, and you're going to need guys pitching at a high level and pitching with confidence when postseason comes around. So candidates to start to fill those spots, just about anybody. Wyatt Short, Brady Feigl, David Parkinson, all have pitched well in relief, and Mike Bianco says any one of those guys could move into a starting role. They will want to be very careful with Wyatt Short because he's been so successful as a closer. And really, Logan, Wyatt Short has become for Ole Miss what Scott Biddle was in his junior season. I think that's as far back as maybe the 2010 season. It was before that. But Scott Biddle as a junior, he was that guy, that one guy in the pen that when they brought him out of the pen, that they knew they were fixing to shut down the other team. And he may come out of the pen in the fourth inning. He may come out of the pen in the ninth inning. But it usually was going to be a successful outing for Scott Biddle. And really that's what Wyatt Short has become this year for Ole Miss, whether in short relief or long relief. although the last couple of outings he has shown that when he gets to the end of his time, whether that's a four-inning run or a little bit more, you need to have somebody ready because the wall's going to come quickly. These guys who have been conditioned to pitching for shorter stints, sometimes you find that when you ask them to do a little bit more than that. So at least one new starter for Ole Miss this weekend, possibly two. Mike Bianco making some moves trying to get this team back on track. And the next opportunity is Arkansas, first game, 6:30 Friday night.
Yeah, Mississippi State is going to make a move as well. Obviously, Dakota Hudson and Austin Sexton have been lights out the last few weeks. They've won every game that those two guys have pitched in conference play. They've won all of their game one and game twos. We refer to them as a Friday and Saturday, but obviously there was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series in that mix. So we have to refer to them as game one and game two so far. But yeah, they've pitched well, especially last weekend against Ole Miss to take that series. Dakota Hudson and Austin Sexton both threw complete games in the first two games of that series. Did not allow an earned run apiece, did not allow a walk, either one of them. So really exceptional starting pitching from Mississippi State, which helped them win that series. It's been that game three that's been Mississippi State's Achilles heel in conference play so far throughout the first 3 weeks. They've lost all of those game threes. They've had an opportunity to sweep every series that they've been in and just haven't gotten it done for one reason or another. The biggest reason is the lack of strikes, a lot of walks, and that's how they lost this past weekend against Ole Miss. Out of Ole Miss's eight runs that they scored, I think five of those runs reached base by getting walked, getting hit, or an error. So it's a situation where they're putting guys on base and then they're allowing a big hit, and you have to kind of credit Ole Miss this past week for getting that timely hit, and that's what led to Mississippi State's demise this past Sunday. But that's kind of been the case for them. Like I said, on that game three, Daniel Brown has started two of those game threes. He started against Vanderbilt, and he started against Ole Miss this past weekend. Against Vanderbilt, it was the defense that let him down. They committed three errors in that first inning, and Vanderbilt jumped all over him early on, and then this past weekend it was walks and hit batters that was Daniel Brown's doing in. And Keegan James, a true freshman, started against Georgia. Same deal for him, just couldn't throw strikes consistently, got himself behind early in the count, and they just haven't had a guy that lasted into four innings. I mean, they would even take four innings at this point from their Sunday starter, but haven't been able to get that. And probably going to make a change this week. We'll have to see who they go with. They haven't announced a starter this weekend against Florida. It'll likely be, my guess would be, a freshman left-hander, Connor Pilkington, who's kind of been their midweek starter throughout the year. He actually started this past Tuesday against UT Martin, but only threw an inning in that game. I think they wanted to get him out there on the mound, get his substitute that for a bullpen session, but they wanted to conserve his arm in case they wanted to throw him against Florida this weekend. Obviously, that's a huge series for Mississippi State, facing the number one team in the country. Florida has been number one throughout most of the year. They did drop a series at Kentucky earlier in the conference season, but they bounced right back and swept Texas A&M, who was previously number one last week. They swept them this past week, so Florida jumped back into the number one spot. They've only lost three games all year, and none of those games have been at home. They've won 28 straight at McKeithen Stadium, and that's where Mississippi State's headed into this weekend. And it's going to be a tough place to play. Obviously, Florida is just good all around. I mean, you look at throughout the roster. I mean, there's potential first-round draft picks all throughout their lineup, all throughout their pitching staff. So Mississippi State's going to face a talented team for sure this weekend. But obviously when you have a Dakota Hudson and Austin Sexton pitching the way that they are of late, it gives you a chance in any game. And it's going to be that Sunday starter that really defines how successful Mississippi State's going to be this weekend. And, yeah, they've been impressive offensively. They've got 11 guys right now hitting over 300. They're hitting 320 as a team. Last year, I think they hit 271 as a team and only hit 22 home runs last year. They've already hit 21 home runs this year, and as I mentioned, hitting 320. So a much better club offensively, a much better club on the mound for Mississippi State. So we'll have to see if they can continue this. They've won their first three SEC series. They're atop the SEC West right now. Them and Kentucky are the only two team or the only two teams in the SEC that have won all three series so far. So we'll have to see if they continue that. Right now, Baseball America and D1 Baseball have Mississippi State as a host site. Obviously, there's still a lot of baseball still left to be played, but right now Mississippi State's sitting pretty good.
Shifting gears, folks, talking a little basketball right now. I was able to catch up with Ole Miss coach Andy Kennedy earlier in the week. Here is that interview. I'm joined now by a guy who should have made at least one run to Papacitas when he was in Houston for the Final Four, Ole Miss basketball coach Andy Kennedy. Andy, how are you?
Hey, Paris, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Did you make that Papacitas run?
No, I ran by it three or four times, but I never actually stopped in there. It's kind of, you know, you can only imagine around the Final Four, there's a few things we have to do. There's a lot of people there, a lot of excitement. I never had a chance to actually sit down, but I did see it.
Well, Andy, I want to ask you one quick question before we get into Mike Trangese as a new consultant for SEC basketball. First, there's a new coach at Vanderbilt, so I want to know with Bryce Drew there in Nashville, with you as Ole Miss coach, what defense will you draw up against Vanderbilt next year if you have a one-point lead and Vanderbilt has one possession beginning from under its goal?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I won't do. I won't have Keith Carter guarding him. That's first and foremost. No, that shot will go down in infamy. It's one of the great moments. You know, there was another great moment on Monday night that when Villanova hit that shot after Carolina stormed back, that will be etched in the history of NCAA tournament lore, much like the shot that Bryce Drew hit. Thankfully, I was not a part of that, although I certainly am as the head coach at Ole Miss, but I'm sure that still brings up mixed emotions, not only for Keith, but for the Florida head coach, Mike White, who was also on that team.
That was a great game Monday night. Andy, were you there for that game, or had you already come back?
No, I'd come back on Monday. I'm a little spoiled, Parrish. If I'm not standing up on that sidelines, I it's hard for me to sit in those stands very often. But I know, obviously, I've been doing this a long time, so I know most all parties involved. I was really proud for Jay Wright and the job that he did. And it's always certainly a special moment when you have those opportunities.
Right about the beginning of March Madness, the SEC announced the hiring of former Big East Commissioner Mike Trangese as a consultant for basketball. What do you think of that move?
Well, you know, ironically enough, Parrish, when I got my first head coaching job in the interim role that I had at Cincinnati in the 2005-2006 season, I get named the head coach mid-August. We were on the quarter system at Cincinnati back in those days, so we didn't start till late September. So we weren't actually in school. About 5 weeks prior to our kids coming in for the fall semester, that's when this coaching transition occurred. I was named the interim head coach, and Cincinnati was going into the Big East, the old Big East. Now, things have changed so much in the last 10, 12 years with realignment, but back in those days, ourselves at Cincinnati, along with Louisville, Marquette, DePaul, we were all joining the old Big East, and Mike Trangese just so happened to be the commissioner of that league. So I have spent some time around him. Great respect for not only, you know, what he's accomplished, but he's a visionary. He's a guy that has great insight into the world of college athletics, and I think he's going to be a very helpful component for us in his role moving SEC basketball forward.
There seems to be a constant effort to increase the basketball profile, get more teams in the tournament, that sort of thing. Is it oversimplification of the issue to just tell people to schedule better? What else is holding people back?
Well, not only schedule better, but you got to win those games. You know, you got to win those games. We're coming off a year of last year where I believe we had five teams in the tournament. It was a good year for us. We had positive momentum. And really, about 2 weeks prior to going into the SEC tournament, if you believe all the prognosticators, the bracketologists of the world, and there seems to be a new one popping up every day, there were really seven teams in play for NCAA tournament bid. It just so happened that closing the season, as well as what transpired in the SEC tournament, you know, had a few of those teams on the outside looking in, ourselves included. And that's just part of the game. So I think sometimes a lot of the talk and a lot of the rhetoric is a bit overdone. Ultimately, you have to schedule competitively so that when you get in your league, you're not hurting your league opponents. Because we all realize, regardless of what the league record is, once you're into the rigors of league play, they're all difficult to win, most especially on the road. I think our league this year, the SEC, had the lowest winning percentage for opportunities to win on the road of all the Power Five. So they're all difficult to win. What you've got to do as a member of the institution is make sure that your non-league schedule is not a weight that pulls down your competitors within the league.
Andy, what about your schedule this past season? Strategically, it looked the same to me, but it was rated pretty weak. What factors went into that?
There's a couple of things that I think worked against us. And again, typically, we schedule 2-3 years out. If you get into, you know, other than the bye games, the guarantee games, the games in which you pay an opponent a fee to come play you one time, you typically do those year in and year out. But for instance, we played a Southeast Missouri team that was rated, it ended up being rated over 300. We did that a couple of years ago as a part of a 3-year series with when Dickie Nutt was the head coach at SEMO. Dickie and Houston obviously were brothers. When Houston was here, I got to know Dickie very well. We did a 2-for-1 where we played in South Haven 1 year. He had a pretty good team. We won that game, and then he was dismissed. So they were going through a coaching transition. With that, you're going to have some player turnover. And as a result, even though going and winning at SEMO, it's the first time an SEC team had ever been in that building. And a lot of people thought I was crazy to do it. But we go and win a road game, and it still pulls you down because they were going through a transition. The same thing happened at Bradley, first SEC team to win in Peoria, Illinois, since I think the early 80s. I did the game as a favor to Brian Wardle, who was a new coach. They were going through a coaching transition. We also did it as part of our multi-team event. If you schedule someone in that multi-team event, the event that we had in Charleston, you can add a game. So we did it to do that, as well as me helping a friend. We go and win at Bradley by double figures. They're going through a youth movement, a coaching change, and as a result, it pulls our RPI down. I could go on and on. We play Northwestern State, who we open our league play with, who we open our season with, and they lose their best player, who was the preseason player of the year in the conference, to a torn ACL in the last minute of our game. If that young man does not get hurt against us, they're competing with Stephen F. Austin at the top of the Southland Conference. They lose their best player. Their RPI plummets. We then lose to George Mason, in the first round of our multi-team event, which hurt us. We go on the road and win at Memphis. We go on the road and win at UMass. You would have never told me going into the season that those games would not give us much pop, but based on the outcomes of their season, those were all wasted opportunities that we didn't get much bang for our buck.
What advice do you think Trangese will have for the conference?
I think he's going to look at it objectively, and basically not only are we going to look at the non-league portion, but I think we've got to really examine the league portion of our schedule. When we went to 18 games and we got out of the East-West, you're going to have an unbalanced schedule. It just so happened that this year our mirror games, and these are our permanent opponents, were Missouri, Mississippi State, and Auburn. The three teams that were ranked the lowest in the RPI. Now, we won 5 of those 6 games, and the only one we lost was without Moody, Saez, and Newby at Mississippi State. 3 of my starters were out with injuries. That's the only one that we lost of those 6. But again, because they were ranked at the bottom of our league schedule also did not help us very much.
Andy, what can you tell us about your roster right now? Do you expect more transition, and how many scholarships are you working with here in the late period?
Yeah, I do expect more. You know, we had four seniors. Stephon Moody, who's going to sorely be missed, as he was one of the most dynamic players in the history of our program. Two guys that had been with us for 4 years in Martavius Newby and Anthony Perez. We picked up a fifth-year transfer in Tomas Diallo, who really made a hefty contribution, most especially down the stretch for us. Terry Brutus. I think this has been announced. Terry Brutus is on pace to graduate in a few weeks, and he is going to explore his fifth-year options at another level, assuming he's healthy and whole, which my hope is that he is. JT Escobar is also asked for his release. There may be some others as we move forward. We signed five guys early. We're in the process of evaluating, you know, who can get in, timing. We've got some foreign elements to this as it relates to a kid that we signed in Latvia, and there's some timing issues when you deal with international students. We're also heavily in the market in the spring for other pieces that can help us moving forward.
It looks like you hit multiple spots with that early signing class. So do you feel like you addressed a lot of needs there?
I do think we did. You know, we signed a couple of junior college kids. We signed an international flavor. We got a couple of high school kids that we're really excited about. One, a shot-blocking, athletic presence at the basket, which I think we need moving forward. Another is a dynamic guard who could help us at multiple positions. So I feel good about the guys that we added early, and we're recruiting diligently during this late period to again, try to add some pieces that I think we need to move us ahead.
Now, would these pieces include a graduate transfer or two?
They're certainly in play. You know, I can't speak to the specifics, but
right.
They're certainly, you know, that's kind of the new market. You'd be amazed at how many of those guys are now available, and we're certainly involved with our share.
Have you been pleased with how that has worked out for you in a couple of years? Looks like even with the experience that these guys bring in, that it still takes a little bit of a period of adjustment.
It does, and typically, you know, we brought in kids, you know, two last year, that came from the OVC, one this year that came from the Big South. So with that, not only are you transitioning into a new environment and a new set of circumstances, you're also transitioning into levels. So that does take a little bit of time, but without MJ Rhett and Terrence Smith 2 years ago, we're not an NCAA tournament team that was able to advance with a victory over BYU. Without Tomas Diallo this year, most especially based on the fact that, you know, Sebastian Saiz was out for seven games, of which we lost four. Moody with the hamstring was out a game, but was not healthy probably for about a month, as you saw. Martavius Newby had a very strange set of circumstances regarding his eye where he missed a bunch of games. Without Tomas Diallo and the contributions he brought, there was no way that this team could have gotten to 20 wins in the regular season and finished 10-8 in the SEC.
That was Ole Miss coach Andy Kennedy talking a little basketball there. You have been listening to Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal with myself, Parrish Alford, and Logan Lowry, the beat writers. Remember also to check out our other Daily Journal podcast, The Memo for All Things Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. Search for that every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then also for your high school sports needs. Prep Rally with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps every Wednesday. And we'll be back here with you next Thursday for Double Coverage. Come join us.